Mark and Michelle's teenage romance is fast and serious.
Yeah! Oh, my God! You serious?
But these spring chickens have a hard time crawling out of their parents' nests.
You know, he may be a lot of things, but I don't see this.
The apple did not fall far from the tree there.
Causing delicate family ties to snap and break.
I'm sick. I'm throwing up at the end of the porch.
There was a significant amount of blood on the floor.
Love may be blind and marriage bliss, but divorce is murder. At 20 years old, local boy Mark Despain has it all.
He was attractive, he's smart, he's got a great personality.
What he doesn't have is love, but he's always looking.
He already knew of Michelle from being in school before she moved, and Mark, being, you know, the young kid he was out running around and spotted her.
Hey.
Hey.
Mark Despain, Northeast Arkansas Welcome Association.
Michelle Kelly from the Forgettable Eighth Grade Classmates. Mark, we've met. We went to school together.
Oh, yeah. I knew that. Are you just here for a visit or?
Nope, here to stay. I just moved in with my dad.
That's good. That's good. You just made my day.
She was beautiful. She's very pretty. She's very physically attractive. And I'm sure that he saw good qualities about her.
He did.
Ah.
Michelle was a nice person, friendly, social.
Obviously, he thought she was pretty and he was attracted to her and that he loved her outgoing attitude. And that was really kind of what attracted them to each other. I think they really, really liked each other's energy.
Honestly, I just think he saw a good time.
But it quickly develops into much more. They're both athletic and have strong ties with their families. In Michelle's case, with her daughter, too.
Michelle had a child from a previous relationship when she met Mark.
She's with her dad's parents right now, but I'm gonna get her back. I just have to get a couple things settled first. I'm sorry, did I totally freak you out?
No. No, I think it's kind of cool you're a mom.
They start spending every minute they can together.
Hey.
Hey.
What's wrong?
How do you feel about being a dad?
Are you serious? Oh my God. Oh my God! Yeah! Oh my God! You serious?
Yeah.
Did I hurt the baby?
No.
Are you okay?
Yes.
Yes.
So I guess everything's okay?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Oh my God.
I don't think he was planning on becoming a father at that time. That's just something that happened. But I was happy to be a grandmother.
But Michelle's father, a bouncer named Carl Kelly, is not happy at all.
Michelle, get out here!
Of course, her father was, well, he was just irate.
I'm really sorry, Dad.
You're not going to put me through this again.
Carl,
not again!
Okay, Carl, calm down.
I got something to say to you.
Hey, are you out of your mind? I could kill you for touching my daughter.
What the?
Kindly get off my property.
You stay out of this. You better do good by her, son. And you, little girl, you're not my problem anymore. You hear me? No more!
He almost did.
Let's go.
Leave it alone.
Is he crazy?
Leave it alone. Let's go.
Hey,
So we agreed to allow her to move in with us until they got married.
Michelle is 3 months pregnant when she and Mark tie the knot in a tiny ceremony.
The day of the wedding, though, Michelle was sick as a dog. But I called my family doctor and I said, look, Doc, she's pregnant and she's getting married today and you gotta make her well.
Mark's father, Jeremiah, is less than pleased.
Mark's dad actually tried to talk him out of getting married. And I think Mark thought that over and maybe considered it, but ended up deciding that he wanted to get married.
The wedding does repair the rift between Michelle and her father. The newlyweds move into their own home, and little Max is born in June of 1998, followed by another son, Billy, in 2001. Michelle's daughter, Bobby, comes to live with them permanently.
Mark was wonderful with Bobby. He loved that little girl. She was precious, she was beautiful, and he was a good father.
Michelle works odd jobs, while Mark studies hard to become a real estate appraiser, just like both his parents. As Mark's dad mentors him, his mom grows fond of his wife.
I loved Michelle. I thought she was a great mother. I thought she was a great wife.
It did look like a picture-perfect family.
But Mark's not a perfect husband in those early years.
Mark, he's just like everyone else. He was young, and if they were fighting, Mark was a good-looking guy, and lots of girls looked.
It's my understanding that Mark had an affair.
What are you talking about?
No, don't. Okay, just don't.
Regretted that that ever happened, and it didn't necessarily have any meaning or connection to him.
Psychotherapist Stacy Kaiser and forensic psychologist Brian Russell see this early tryst as cause for concern.
I think the fact that Mark cheats on Michelle really early in their marriage speaks to the fact that he's in over his head trying to be a husband and father.
It is possible that Mark isn't going to cheat again. However, it does concern me that this happened so early in their relationship. They met very young. Michelle already has a small child. They end up with a shotgun wedding. The family is struggling with them being together. And so those are a lot of challenges to overcome in order to be together.
You know, there's a good chance they're going to run into some realizations along the way that they might have picked someone different had they waited longer and not had to do it under pressure.
Mark and Michelle get past his fling.
And honestly, it sounds goofy, but I think he became a better person from it.
They focus on building a beautiful life together.
After Mark got his license, he came to work for his dad and I. The way the real estate business works, you know, we're not just in an office all day long. We're here, we're there, we're yonder. And so it wasn't like we were all together all the time, which probably made it the reason we lasted that long.
Mark went on to work kind of in the family business and loved it.
He knew what he wanted and he was going after it. He was impatient. Gung-ho was his thing.
Mark is gung-ho over a property that most other local appraisers are wary of, especially his dad.
Is that for a bargain?
Looks like a hellhole to me.
Why don't you both take a look and see?
Because time is money, and that's a waste of both.
I'll just go myself, okay?
Suit yourself.
It was in an area that some people would have called risky.
But Mark surprises everyone by flipping the park for a tidy $100,000 profit.
So?
Sure enough, he did.
Do we have a deal?
And just made a ton of money off of it. And of course, once he done that, the bug bit and he was ready to, you know, go on to his next big thing.
Mark was incredibly ambitious. He never quit.
Congrats.
Thank you.
It's just the first of many good investments to come.
Can I have a slice of humble pie with that?
You got it.
You did good, son.
He liked houses, he liked learning, he liked all the business part of that. He enjoyed that and was good at it.
With Mark's financial success comes a brand new, lavish lifestyle.
Mark and Michelle lived in a very upscale neighborhood, nice homes.
They would go on cruises, they would go to Mexico, to Cancun or somewhere. You know, they lived high on the hog and
cheers.
Seemed like they spent money freely.
They want for nothing. And neither does Michelle's dad, Carl.
Mark appeared to care deeply for his father-in-law.
Ooh. Hope there's some of that left for me.
I think Mark tried to look out for him and take care of him.
As God is my witness, there will always be some bubbly left for you.
Mm-hmm.
Cheers.
Cheers.
While Mark's relationship with Carl has vastly improved since Michelle's pregnancy. The one with his own parents is starting to go south.
The bank called.
Mark wanted to be an entrepreneur. He convinced them to go in with him to purchase some properties and try to make some fast money and try to grow that business and build a real estate empire.
You can't rob Peter to pay Paul!
When the dad realized that the banks weren't getting paid, Mark and Michelle were living high on the hog, that really caused a rift.
It's called investment. Do you want me to explain how it works?
I'll show you how that works, smartass!
His dad's kind of a hard-headed, tough dude, you know, and Mark was hard-headed enough as well. So, I mean, that created conflict naturally.
Mark craved his father's love and acceptance, and he didn't always get that. Mark got to a point in his life, especially as he was getting older, that he would not take, you know, anything that his dad was going to dish out. I think to a certain extent, he may have feared him some.
But there are much darker fears in store.
There's something I need to tell you.
When they make these kind of accusations, nobody believes the child.
And so then they became estranged, never to reconcile.
Mark and Michelle Despain get past his extramarital fling unscathed. But his relationship with his father, Jeremiah, is suffering. After 6 years working together as real estate appraisers, they resolve their issues by parting ways. In 2007, Mark launches his own company in direct competition to his dad.
He wanted to kind of venture out and go out on his own. And he was just really motivated, really ambitious to grow and do the best that he possibly could.
He hires both Michelle and her father to help.
She was responsible for paying the bills, keeping track of the accounts. Carl was the guy that Mark hired to go around and pick up the rent.
He wanted to give his father-in-law an opportunity, something stable. They needed a little bit of help. So he was somebody that would be trustworthy and that they could count on.
With things looking up, Mark adopts Bobby as his own. It seems like one big happy family.
Baby girl, hey.
Until
hey,
Bobby, now 13 years old, drops a bomb.
There's something I need to tell you.
I remember that day because Mark said, Mom, you're gonna have to come to the house with me. And I said, well, what for? And he said, well, you're just gonna have to come to the house.
Mark calls his dad and asks him to come as well. It's an ambush.
Mark, what's going on?
Give me your phone.
My phone?
Give me your phone.
There were some accusations that Bobby made against Mark's dad.
It's my understanding that there were some provocative photos found.
Things that were very much out of the ordinary and very inappropriate.
What's this?
I was going to talk to you about this.
Oh, you knew about this. That's all the proof I need.
Will somebody tell me what the devil is going on here?
My
daughter's been the victim of a sexual predator.
You asked your granddaughter for nude photos.
I did nothing of the sort.
Yeah, tell it to the judge.
Jeremiah flatly denies the accusations, but police launch an investigation.
I'd never do anything like that. Tell him, Tana. Tana, tell him.
I remember thinking, you know, he may be a lot of things, but I don't see this. But I've also been told that nobody ever believes the child. You know, when they make these kind of accusations, nobody believes the child. And so for me, I had to give Bobby that benefit of the doubt.
Both Bobby and Jeremiah are questioned by police.
There was an investigation into allegations against Mark's dad.
He said that he had let Bobby borrow his phone because Mark and Michelle had taken hers away because of discipline.
Thanks for the phone.
Oh, you're welcome.
Apparently, Bobby had used the phone to take some pictures to send to boyfriends and that she didn't delete them.
So, are you going to tell him or am I?
Jeremiah threatens to tell her parents, but evidently she got to them first. Still, Jeremiah appears to be telling the truth.
There was a polygraph given, and he passed that, and so no charges were filed, and there was no proof that he had violated the law.
Mark and Michelle cut off all ties with Jeremiah.
I think Mark truly believed what Bobby had said. I don't think he wanted to believe that Bobby could lie about something like that.
Mark's dad is angry, too, at his son for not believing him. Mark's mom stands by her husband.
I left. I never got to go back, and I saw them very little after that.
The family dynamics with Mark and Michelle and their family are a giant mess because these two need family support. They've completely alienated, whether it's warranted or not, Mark's parents, and they've got Carl, who is around, but he seems to have this sort of enmeshed, unusual relationship where he's basically like one of the married partners, and so things are really messy.
There are lies and then there are lies. If Bobby's story about Jeremiah's involvement in the sexting is a lie, it's a sociopathic lie because it is a lie that threatens to tear apart the fabric of the family. It actually succeeds in alienating Mark from his parents for the foreseeable time.
On top of everything, Mark's real estate business is hurting.
Sorry, I'll leave the rest tomorrow.
Good, because I'll be back tomorrow.
For Mark's company, it's not just the recession that's hurting them.
Michelle was the bookkeeper for a period of time. It was apparent that her bookkeeping style was not great.
Just hundreds of thousands of dollars spent or missing or buried somewhere.
Isn't that right?
Hey, not according to these bank statements. Where did you even get these figures from?
I thought it was right. I'm sorry I made a mistake.
Sorry isn't good enough. Listen, Michelle, it's just a little too much for you to handle, okay? Just leave it with me, I'll figure something out.
There was never necessarily an accusation of her necessarily doing anything wrong. It was just a matter of publicly, hey, this is not working out. It's better if we don't work together. It's better if she goes and does something different.
Michelle goes to work as an assistant at a bank.
When they made that decision and Michelle got the job at the bank, she seemed happy about it. She seemed excited to be new environment, have new friends.
Friends like 24-year-old assistant Jesse McKenzie.
She's mid-30s, he's early 20s.
But for Michelle and Mark, This young man may be the tipping point.
Their marriage was almost as bankrupt as their business, I think.
We were dispatched as detectives to the scene regarding a shooting victim.
Mark Despain replaces his wife Michelle as his company's bookkeeper, leading her to a new job and new friends. Friends like Jesse McKenzie. Except he's not just her friend for long. She's now the young man's sugar mama.
She paid for his rent, groceries, utilities.
He was a young man dating an older woman who was married and paying his way. I'm sure he liked that a lot.
Wait, I have to get this.
She's spending so much, it's hard to keep it hidden from Mark.
He had actually texted her and told her, you know, gotta slow down, you've got to cut back.
Mark begins to suspect that Michelle is hiding something, or someone.
When he started looking at bills and certain pieces of information and putting it together, it all kind of came crashing down, you know, once he started putting the puzzle pieces together.
So Mark follows her after work one day, all the way to Paragould, Arkansas, 22 miles away.
You should go. I got this. Go.
Mark was heartbroken and sad and confused because he really didn't see it coming. Mark considered divorce as anybody would, but I think that he felt like his kids needed stability. But also another part of it was Mark had stepped out, and I think that part of him felt guilty about that. He still felt like he needed to overcome that by giving her a chance. Because as he said, I've made mistakes, we all make mistakes. We got through that all those years ago. We can get through this. And I think that was his take on it, which was a hell of a take.
At this moment in Mark and Michelle's relationship, I'm not sure she's looking for a way out. I think at this point, she is having her cake and eating it too. She still has her family intact. There's still income coming in from Mark. She's able to have this relationship with Jesse on the side that is reinvigorating her and giving her some fun.
Anytime there's infidelity in a marriage, it suggests that there's a giant problem with the foundation of the marriage, which is supposed to be trust. So on the one hand, I can sort of respect Mark for thinking, well, it would be awfully hypocritical of me to get all righteously indignant about the fact that she did the very same thing that Mark had done before. At the same time, the fact remains that there clearly is not the right measure of trust in the relationship. And so if the marriage is to go on and be healthy, there is going to have to be some serious introspective work done by both parties who are interested in staying together and figuring out why these things happened and what they need to do to rebuild the foundation and build on it going forward.
Instead of splitting up, the Despains resolve to reconnect.
He really wanted to have a family and keep it together. I think Mark wanted to make things work.
Work starts with lunch.
After they had lunch, Michelle wanted to go get ice cream across the street.
They have a great time, taking almost 2 hours for their daytime date.
They then parted ways from there. Michelle went back to work. Mark drove back to the residence.
When Michelle returns to work, her father is waiting for her with bad news.
They had shutoff notices, so she had to run home and get the bills so she could make the payments.
But unpaid bills are not the only thing Michelle will find.
at that point, we couldn't rule out anyone as being a suspect.
When Michelle Despain comes home early after a happy makeup lunch with her husband, Mark, she makes a horrible discovery.
We were dispatched as detectives to the scene.
There were items in the floor, broken glass. There were drawers that were open, and it looked like they'd been ransacked.
First gunshot wound that we found appeared to be on his left side under the armpit area. The second shot appeared to be to the face, closer to the eyes.
Michelle is nowhere to be found until police look outside.
She was hiding underneath a bush.
They bring Michelle to a neighbor's.
I came home. I needed to pick up some papers. And there was stuff everywhere. I went into the kitchen and his ice cream was still there. And then I saw him. He was on the ground. There was a pool of blood. I was terrified. I didn't know who was in the house, so I ran out and I had to call 911. I had to get out of there.
Word travels fast in the small community.
A family friend had called the house. And he said, "Mark's your son, right?" And I said, "Yeah, what's he done this time?" He said, "Tana, I heard he's been shot." I just lost it.
All of us that were friends wondering what happened, who would do that. There was a lot of confusion, like, why would this happen? He was one of those guys, you know, why would that happen to him? You know, why would anybody want to kill Mark? So everybody just was like, obviously it had to be a robbery that went wrong or something of that nature, because nothing else made sense.
It doesn't make sense to police either.
There was no sign of forced entry. There was no windows that were raised up. Items of high dollar value were still there. It didn't look right.
It's not the only thing that doesn't look right.
What we'd had upon speaking with neighbors was that earlier in the day, there had been two African-American males seen driving through the neighborhood.
Not everyone thinks it was a stranger.
Carl was accusing Mark's father of being involved in the murder.
Police don't know what to think.
I interviewed Carl Kelly and Mark's father that same afternoon.
He was extremely upset, you know, just almost need to be consoled.
I was up on the roof when I got the call. I'd been up there at least an hour.
He was just suffering an extreme loss.
Next up is Carl.
He claimed that he loved Mark as his own son. Don't know why anybody would want to do this to him.
He also has an alibi.
I was at the bank with Michelle. Anyone there would have seen us. Plus, they probably have cameras.
The bank does indeed have security footage that clears Carl. It also clears Michelle. But the cops want to speak to her anyway.
Is there anyone that had it in for your husband? Or you, for that matter?
I don't think so. But I think there's something you should know. I was seeing someone. We knew each other from the bank.
She admitted to Detective Brooks that she had been having an extramarital affair with a younger co-worker. She admitted to him that she had been paying for items for this young man.
I got this. Go.
At that point, we couldn't rule out anyone as being a suspect.
His name is Jesse. Jesse McKenzie.
Police bring him in.
I felt sorry for the guy, but I didn't want him dead. I mean, he was kind of paying my rent, in a sense.
At the same time, police request search warrants for the phones of those closest to Mark and Michelle. 24-year-old Jesse is quickly dropped as a person of interest.
We were able to rule him out, account for where his whereabouts were at that particular time of the day.
The same is true for Mark's estranged father, Jeremiah.
The day Mark was murdered, Mark's dad was on the roof. We had a roof problem, and he was on the roof.
Meanwhile, Michelle pulls herself together long enough to plan her husband's visitation and funeral, to which her husband's family is not invited.
I called Michelle and I said, look, I know we've had our differences, but let's lay Mark to rest in peace and together. She said, don't call me again. You'll be advised of what you can do. And I was heartsick. So she finally told us that we could have our own visitation for 2 hours.
Assuming that Michelle really did believe that Jeremiah had done something inappropriate with Bobby, it makes sense to me that she wouldn't want that side of the family around Bobby, around the funeral, or around her.
Michelle may have excluded Mark's parents because Mark was estranged from them for the last several years of his life, and she may have believed that he wouldn't want them to have been there.
However, when I put myself in Mark's parents' shoes and I see that they don't think that there's been any guilt, they've been estranged from their son and now he's dead, I completely understand how they would want to be at the funeral and they'd be devastated that they were being shut out. It could add anger to their grief. They could have additional resentment to Michelle. And so all of that stuff just complicates things for them on an emotional level.
On August 29th, 2011, Mark's body is laid to rest, with his killer still on the loose. But that very same day, detectives get the lead of a lifetime.
During this time, the confidential informant came forward reporting that an individual by the name of Quelo was involved in the death of Mark Despain.
Quelo is well known to police.
His actual name is Terrence Barker.
And there's more. One of Quelo's associates is Johnny Hubbard, one of Mark's tenants.
Johnny is somebody that we know in the court system and have known for years. He was kind of a likable sort.
Police bring in Johnny Hubbard and Terrence Barker.
During the first interview, Mr. Barker denied having any knowledge.
But Johnny Hubbard turns out to be much more cooperative.
This day was coming.
So on Wednesday, August 24th, Johnny Hubbard had picked up Terrence Barker
to go to a secret meeting with Carl Kelly.
Johnny Hubbard would have known Michelle's father, Mr. Carl Kelly, from when he would come around and pick up the rent money.
Armed with this info, the police bring Quelo back in. He's willing to talk.
Carl did it.
Except police already know that's not true. Carl's alibi is rock solid. He was at the bank with Michelle. Faced with proof that Carl is not the shooter, Quelo changes his tune one last time and drops a bombshell.
Shot him twice.
Terrence Barker stated he was to receive, I believe it was $7,000.
We were able to show within days Carl Kelly, Johnny Hubbard, and Terrence Barker as the potential suspects in this particular case.
You get paid when it's done.
Mark was his meal ticket. Why would Carl want Mark dead?
Our digital forensics guys found some text messages.
It's not necessarily a red flag, but it's something very strong to consider.
Michelle Despain's father, Carl Kelly, is in police custody. They think he hired a street criminal to shoot and kill Michelle's husband, Mark. The police have no idea why.
Once Carl Kelly was transported to the police department, Detective Brooks attempted to conduct an interview with him.
Vic, you know I'm not gonna talk without an attorney.
So, no interview was done with it.
With her father in custody, Michelle stops cooperating with police.
Well, Michelle never spoke with us again after my second interview. I was notified by her attorney that she had retained him as counsel and she would not be speaking with I or any other detectives.
Undeterred, the cops keep digging.
It was clear from overdraft fees, late payments. They were living above their means. More money going out than there was coming in, of course.
Cheers.
Looked like they were on the verge of bankruptcy.
Meaning with Mark dead, Michelle would have to carry all that debt by herself.
There were two life insurance policies on Mark Despain. Each was in the amount of $500,000 payable upon his death, with the beneficiary being Michelle.
Carl doesn't get a cent. The fact is, Michelle Despain is the only person who stood to gain financially from the death of her husband. Unless, of course, she was willing to share that money.
Terrence stated to me that he was supposed to get $7,000 to $10,000. He was supposed to be paid out of the life insurance that the wife was supposed to receive from the death of her husband, from Mark.
Police turn to phone records to see if there's a conspiracy, but there's nothing to find.
We were able to see that on this particular day that Carl and Michelle both had wiped their phones relatively clean, deleted would be the appropriate term.
They request forensic searches and wait. Months go by.
This is not something that our forensic examiners are able to obtain overnight or anything like that.
In fact, it's 9 months later when they manage to recover deleted texts between Carl and his daughter, Michelle, from August 24th, 2011. The day Mark Despain was shot in his own home.
Michelle had texted her father.
We were able to determine through those text messages that Michelle was communicating with Carl Kelly, giving him play-by-play of where her and Mark were up until the time when he was on his way back to the residence.
The detectives were then able to get an arrest warrant, and the judge approved it and picked up Michelle.
Michelle Despain is charged with capital murder. Police think they know how the whole crime played out.
Seems like Michelle's motive all came down to finances and money. From her taking money out of the family account, supporting her boyfriend, obviously not keeping records correctly.
Carl thought his daughter would inherit this empire of rent houses, and he knew how much money that they did make. He thought that with the insurance money and with the properties that his daughter would keep him on as being the manager and probably cut him in on the deal.
For me, that is the coldest you can ever become, is when you can sit across the table from your husband, knowing when he gets up from that table and goes home, and knowing what he's going to walk into.
While they were eating ice cream, Carl was letting Terrence Barker into Mark and Michelle's home.
Carl Kelly drives him to Mark and Michelle's house.
And then when she got home a little bit before 3, she goes into the house and finds Mark on the floor, deceased.
The children were all in school that day, so Michelle found Mark approximately about 20 minutes before they normally would have come in themselves and found that their father had been murdered.
When Michelle is confronted with the recovered text messages, she has a different story.
I wanted to leave him. My dad was supposed to help me do that. I wasn't planning on killing him.
Police and prosecutors don't believe her. They believe Terrence Barker, the murderer for hire.
Terrence, of course, was supposed to be paid out of the life insurance that the wife was supposed to receive from the death of her husband, from Mark. I believe I had asked the question, do you think that she had any idea? And he said,
yeah. I knew where she was the whole day.
But Michelle's attorney files a motion alleging the messages were recovered without sufficient warrants.
These text messages weren't found on the first search. They were found on a subsequent search.
Going to trial could be a gamble.
If the judge would suppress the text messages because a new search warrant wasn't obtained, then everything would be out the window and we wouldn't have a case. And I remember Mark's father saying, I want Michelle to go to prison.
So prosecutors cut a deal with Michelle. She pleads guilty to 3 counts of hindering apprehension and is sentenced to 30 years.
Michelle is guilty of hindering apprehension, for sure. She knew that her father was involved in Mark's death and lied to the police officers. I don't think that Mark Despain would be dead today if it weren't for Terrence Barker willing to go in and kill him for a promise to pay. Was justice served with regard to her? She got a 30-year sentence. She becomes eligible for parole at some point, but that doesn't mean that she'll get parole.
I feel that as long as the family, as long as they are happy with that and consider that to be justice in this case and can be justice for Mark and these children, then I'm fine with that.
Johnny Hubbard is sentenced to 18 years for hindering apprehension. Terrence Barker, the trigger man, is sentenced to 35 years. Carl Kelly is also sentenced to 35 years.
One of the things that we see about Michelle throughout the entire story is that she doesn't seem to have a conscience about anything. She's a true narcissist. She doesn't have a conscience about cheating on her husband. She doesn't have a conscience about using their family money to take care of another guy. And what narcissists do is immerse themselves and dedicate themselves to relationships that are serving them at the current time. As soon as Mark started to become a disappointment to her, or she didn't feel as connected to him, then she moved on to Jesse.
Mark's parents probably looked back at the entire history of Mark and Michelle and saw Michelle as pretty much nothing but bad news for their son.
I'm guessing that Mark's family is disappointed that Michelle has not been accused of the murder. However, I'm guessing that they are getting some level of satisfaction out of the fact that she did get 30 years for what she pled to.
She got 30 years. She has to serve a minimum of 5. I don't know if justice is ever served when you lose a loved one like this.
By the time that Mark was killed, and then, you know, there was no opportunity for them to reconcile. Mark's dad was a broken man because he hadn't spoken to his son in so many years, and you just can't get that back.
I think Mark, unfortunately, he just had too big of a heart. And I think that people knew that. He was the victim of trusting. He was the victim of wanting love and wanting acceptance. And that's sad.
Mark was a great friend to me. And he was full of mistakes like everybody else, but he was an awesome guy. You know, great energy, great spirit. He was an awesome father, a great dad.
We know where Mark's remains are, and we can go visit. We know who did it, and they're all in jail. And there are so many families that don't have that. And so we consider ourselves lucky.